12. Westyke stood on the dock at Heaven's Spire, waiting for the airship that would bring the bait up to him. He had arrived the night before to make preparations. The cleaners, site of Locke's first big public escape, had been checked and rechecked, and any prisoner Locke knew removed to another facility. The streets had been swept for charms. Families. It always came down to families. For the strong-minded, family was a strength, a sign of good breeding and a trust that crossed generations. For the simple, it was a gap in the armour. Those who refused to see the world as it truly was could never make the hard choice to let something happen to family. Westyke was enjoying the company of the ancients, who were in no way simple or weak of mind. Lysagoras was, in fact, here, still wearing his chiselled blonde nobleman, and smiling contentedly as he watched Westyke work. Westyke took a breath of the cool morning air and tried not to look too anxious. Mr. Slant was next to him, looking around as though a little confused by the docks.
"The puppeteers have done a great job with the new information rollout," said Mr. Slant. "Just a great job. It's a little tricky, balancing these crime stories with news of the Festival of Excellence, though. I'd really like to go for a more positive spin, if that's something we can manage." "Ideally, we capture Locke and her team," said Westyke. "And you go back to your normal reports right away."
Mr. Slant blinked at him, as though just remembering that he was there.
"Yes, right. That's certainly something we could do." "You know," said Lysagoras, "it's entirely possible that Locke and her little team of thieves will wait until Benjamin de Quayle's mother is in custody at the cleaners."
Westyke smiled.
"It is, my lord, but I don't think so, and neither do you." "Don't I?" Lysagoras asked, not looking over.
He had his hands linked behind his back, and his black coat flared in the wind.
"You're not the kind of man who wastes time," Westyke said confidently. "You wouldn't be here unless you thought, as I do, that Locke would make her move before the mother is moved to the cleaners." "Fair point."
Lysagoras nodded.
"Now, tell me why I think that."
Westyke took another lungful of cool morning air and matched Lysagoras's stance, linking his own hands behind his back.
"This Locke isn't stupid. She has a noble upbringing and education, even a distinguished military career. But you and I have both crossed swords with her, and I think you've seen the same thing I did."
He grinned.
"She has an impressive minute-to-minute game. Back her into a corner and she will go right through you, no matter how she has to do it. But look at her long-term planning and you see the wasted potential. She's an Urujar and a woman, and she's angry about it, my lord. She can't work within the system, she can't take the time to let the game play out, and she can't accept the simple facts of how the world works."
Westyke shook his head.
"It's a pity, because she could have been so much more, if only she cared about things other than the colour of her own skin."
Lysagoras smiled.
"All of that is one reason, Westyke," he said.
And as Westyke let out a small, relieved breath, he added,
"And the other reason is that, according to the message I just received on the band, Locke's people broke the mother out of custody down on Rosorniki 15 minutes ago."
Westyke executed a mental pivot that impressed even himself.
"I knew trusting Ariko Yurichi's trackers was a mistake, but I wanted to give them a chance to prove me wrong. I take full responsibility for their failure, my lord. And if you believe it's necessary to have them killed, I can't really argue with you. What's important now is what we've learned."
Lysagoras's smile broadened.
"And what have we learned?" "That everything we've been doing is right," Westyke said without hesitation,
making direct eye contact and nodding as he went on.
"I was right about how Locke would take immediate action, and about how personal connections would be a useful tool against her. You were right to be sceptical about our normal forces' ability to react to threats of this nature. We need to adjust individual stratagems, of course, but with what we've learned here, we should only be more confident now that our next steps will be successful."
"Yes, yes, of course," said Mr. Slant. "Our next steps?"
Westyke continued nodding and kept his eyes on Lysagoras at all times.
"If you planned to kill me, my lord, there's nothing I could do to stop you. But I am an asset to your team, and I don't see you wasting resources at such a critical point in your operation.
You could put a band on me, but you have Archvoyant Subvert banded already, so you clearly don't lack for political power. Killing me for the failure of the subordinates you assigned me would be like killing you for Arica Eurici and Gilspower's failure to destroy the Republic a few months ago.
Nesagoras let him hang for a long moment. Then he nodded slowly.
Not bad, Westyke. Not bad at all. You are quite correct. As for Arica Eurici and Gilspower,
he sighed.
Arica Eurici was too bloodthirsty, and he is paid for it. Gilspower was a great fighter and a true patriot, but he always lacked the conviction necessary to make the difficult decisions. You have heard the story about him at the last days of the Ancients. They say he was a king who held off the glimmering folk while the last of his people fled to the realm of the Ancients.
Westyke shook his head.
They also say he gave up some of his own essence to heal the wounds of the warrior wielding him. The legends say that it was his son, but I assume that was time and misunderstanding affecting the telling of the tale. He was a general, not a king,
Nesagoras said quietly.
And he had fought the glimmering folk for years. His forces were to hold position while the rest of us retreated back to our realm. Gilspower himself was to retreat, leaving a small group to sacrifice themselves.
Nesagoras looked down, and one hand balled itself into a fist.
It was an excellent plan, said Mr. Slant, and we left enough thralls to fight the glimmering folk to cover the retreat. It was really astonishingly well managed, coordinating that kind of effort with so few losses of our people. Just astonishing. But then,
Nesagoras went on,
he sent the rest back and chose himself as sacrifice. Even when the glimmering folk overwhelmed him, when he could have had his thrall throw him through the gateway, Gilspower chose to give up what he was, that brilliant mind, to heal the human who had carried him.
His face twisted into something that was either a frown or a snarl.
Can you imagine what a selfish, weak-minded waste of talent that was? It is far beyond me, my lord.
Westyke ducked his head.
Suffice it to say that I am glad you are here now to lead us. Thank you, Westyke.
Nesagoras lifted his head, and the snarl was gone, replaced with the same genial smile he usually wore.
For now, you should know that Archvoyant Subvert has yielded some very useful information. If our course is, as you say, correct, what would you do with the knowledge that Justicar Captain Pyvik is Locke's lover?
Locke, Ulilenia, and Icy stepped off the tree ship the elves had let them borrow and hunkered down in the bushes, not far from the walls surrounding the Westyke family estate. Wards, Locke asked, pointing at the walls with her walking stick.
I am but the dove to Desidora's falcon, Ulilenia said, looking carefully at the walls. But I do sense something.
She stepped forward carefully.
It seems warded against active magic.
Locke frowned. Can you break it without triggering an alarm?
No, but as the fox creeps across the frozen pond, I will step lightly and swiftly and leave no trace.
She shimmered and shifted into a snowy white dove and flew off toward the wall.
I carry no magic, Icy said, looking over at Locke. I do not believe I shall have any difficulty.
Right. Locke reached under her leather jacket, pulled the demon ward necklace over her head, and tossed it back by the tree ship. No magic. She and Icy reached the wall, which was cut stone and 15 feet high, half covered with long growing vines. Icy, smaller and lighter, stepped up without hesitation, grabbed what looked to Locke like a completely sheer surface, and pulled himself up. Locke tucked her walking stick into the back of her belt, ran her fingers along the wall until she found a handhold, and then pulled herself up.
Do you require assistance? Icy said from atop the wall.
I was a scout, Locke muttered, launching herself up and grabbing another handhold. I know how to climb.
As you see,
Icy said politely, still perched atop the wall and looking down at her. Locke slipped on a bit of vine, swore to herself, pulled herself up by her fingers until her feet found perches, and finally took the hand Icy wordlessly offered and pulled herself up the rest of the way.
Show off, she muttered.
"Someone must keep you humble while Gale is otherwise occupied," Icy said, smiling faintly as he dropped from the wall into the estate. Locke dropped down after him, rolled, and winced at the ache in her still healing ribs. The yard inside was ruthlessly trimmed, with a single path leading to the manor from the main gate, and hedges and statues scattered across the otherwise bare expanse of green. "Ululenia, guards," she asked, as she moved behind an ornamental hedge trimmed into a perfect teardrop shape. Icy stepped in beside her. A snowy white dove flew up and landed atop the hedge. Ululenia looked down at them and cooed.
"I believe she feels that speaking in our minds would activate the alarms," Icy said.
"I got that," Locke nodded to Ululenia. "Go, we'll follow your lead." The dove cooed again, waited a moment, and then flapped to a hedge a dozen yards away. Locke and Icy darted after her. In the distance, Locke saw guards at the gate, and more pacing near the front entrance to the manor.
"You are not worried for Gale?"
Icy asked, while Ululenia waited and pecked at the hedge. "He and Hessler and Derry will be fine. Besides, he'd be no good to me worrying about his mother in the middle of a job. That thinking gets a scout killed." Locke snuck a glance out from the hedge, saw one of the guards coming their way, and ducked back. "He was right. He warned me, and I didn't listen."
"You made the correct decision in drawing them out," Icy said quietly. "You are not responsible for the actions of your enemy."
"Doesn't matter who's responsible for it. It happened, and we're fixing it." Locke looked over at him. "You're not worried about your family?"
"I lost my family some time ago," Icy said.
"Sorry." Icy nodded in acknowledgement.
"Ululenia has no family. Hessler's mother has passed away. Desidora was raised by priests of Gerrier after her mother died giving birth. Aunt Derry is an orphan. You and Thorn are the only other members of the team with close living relatives."
Locke winced. Of course they would have talked it out. "The Lapa Temporum is in Tarn's hometown." Ululenia fluttered to another hedge, and Locke and Icy crept out after her, and then darted quickly to another hedge, keeping their bodies low as the manor came closer. "She checking in with her family while she and Desidora hit it?"
"Presumably," Icy said,
as Ululenia flapped to another hedge, then rapidly turned and came back. Locke and Icy ducked back.
"Which leaves only the question of Pyvik and your sister."
"Pyvik is one of us. He can handle himself."
"And that means you do not worry about him."
"It means he doesn't need me," Locke said quietly, "to save him."
"You have not yet mentioned Noria," Icy said.
"Nope." Ululenia flapped out to the hedge again and flapped her wings anxiously. Locke and Icy darted in behind her. They were almost to the manor now, and the guards were within earshot. Locke and Icy circled the hedge carefully, keeping it between them and the nearest guard, and Ululenia flitted up onto a low balcony overlooking the yard. Locke went first, making no noise as she leaped up, caught the balcony, and pulled herself over. Icy landed beside her a moment later, flattening himself so that the guards on the ground could not see him. The balcony was a small half-circle with a single love seat and a tray where one of the presumed lovers could rest a drink while watching the sunset. A double glass door led into the manor itself, and Locke looked at Ululenia, who flapped to the door, landed, and cooed again. Keeping low, Locke tried the door handle. It opened under her grip. No massive alarm sounded. She crept in. The first thing that struck Locke was a sense of having been in this manor before. The carpet was the same outdated dark green it had been in the noble manors she'd visited as a child and played in while her parents drank and talked politics with the adults. The same bronze busts of old generals lined the hallway. The same paintings lined the walls. Expensive and famous works, but not originals, because the hallway would get sun in the afternoon, and even if you had fading wards built into the frames, you didn't put the good paintings in a hallway people would walk past. A classic old painting of the gods and an emotive portrait of proud Aelmaseth that happened to have the face of an old archvoyant and a modern piece that was considered popular these days. All of them were jumbled together, with no thought of style or pacing or grouping or anything except, "Here, look at how many of these I could afford."
We may safely use magic now that we are inside, Ululenia said, and then proved it by shifting back into human form. She looked at Locke in concern. Is something wrong, little one?
Nobles, Locke said. Come on, we want the study. Westyke felt safe here. It'll be hidden, but in a room where he can look at it any time he wants to feel smart.
Can you locate the study? Icy asked.
Could Ululenia find water if you dropped her in a forest?
Come on. Locke started walking. They moved quietly, but without hiding. The hallway was open enough that running from doorway to doorway would be pointless anyway. Locke reached a corner, peeked around, saw no one, and crossed.
You should warn your sister, Icy said behind her as she passed a doorway.
Still got her hooks in you, huh?
Locke checked a corner, saw an old servant carrying linens down the hall, and raised a hand. The servant stepped into a side room, and Locke nodded and kept moving. Naria always was good at getting boys to do what she wanted.
As the lioness swishes her tail while walking away, Ululenia added.
She is a baroness, Icy said, who was once Archvoyan Silistin's first blade.
She is a baroness, Locke shot back, who is in charge of our family's land and does not need me to come cause trouble.
So you are concerned, Icy said, and are remaining distant to protect her.
Damn it, do we really have to do this now?
Locke glared at him as they crossed an intersection. If I go to Pyvik, it endangers him. If I go to Naria, it endangers her. He doesn't need me there. She wouldn't want me there.
You speak of what they need or want, little one. What of you?
Someone has to focus on saving the damn world while the rest of you think about virgins and my sister, Locke muttered with a little wave, passing an open doorway into a dining hall. Icy sighed.
Even beyond her value as a lure for you, Noria's time as an assassin may have left her with information the ancients would find valuable.
Naria can take care of herself, Locke said, and turned a corner to find a guard standing watch a few yards away. The guard, a gargantuan bearded man wearing heavy armor and a large open-faced helmet, looked at Locke in alarm, and his hand wrapped around a whistle he wore on a necklace.
Locke caught his hand with the hook of the walking stick, checking the whistle just shy of his mouth and yanking it back. Then she kicked him in the side of the knee, grabbed his whistle-blowing hand with her own free hand, and cracked the walking stick against his face smartly. The guard went down, groaning, and didn't move.
I do not doubt your sister's ability to counter any threat she is aware of, Icy said,
helping Locke drag the guard into a small sitting room nearby.
Nor do I discount her essentially selfish nature. You are aware that paladin bonds are being sold for their health benefits. What if becoming a paladin could restore her sight?